News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, 8:07 on your Tuesday morning on FM Talk 106.5. Time to join with, Quinn Hillier, quinnhillier.com, of course, the advocate in Louisiana, and on and on and on. And Quinn, good morning. And also, as a football fan, you were I was the one of all of us that watched some of the pregame and maybe the kickoff. I just went to bed. I was tired, but quite a game last night, huh?
What a great game. And I'm wondering if Coach Cignetti is actually just Gene Hackman in disguise.
Yeah.
Hoosiers. I mean, Indiana winning a national football title, that's, you know, that's not part of the script, guys.
No.
This was something else. It was, first of all, a very well-played game by both teams. Immensely entertaining. And talk about some gutty calls that I wouldn't have made if I were Coach Cignetti, but he made them. And this Mendoza kid, he's just a winner, and he's so likable. I mean, they interview him afterwards, and he's straight out of the 1950s, bubblegum card.
He's like a member of the cast of Archie. Like, he's like Jughead's friend is the quarterback.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe he's just, it's kind of like something out of Leave It to Beaver. I don't know.
Leave It to Beaver is exactly it. And then that touchdown, if the listeners haven't seen it, go find his final touchdown, 4th and 5, and makes a nice sidestep in the backfield, runs up a few yards, makes another nice little move in the meantime, then gets hit hard, breaks the tackle, spins away, does another sidestep, and launches himself from about the 4-yard line.
Yeah.
And gets crunched as he's stretching out and crossing the goal line. I mean, absolutely crunched, and I swear I saw this. If you look really closely, because the camera cut away.
Yeah, he collapsed on the sideline.
He gets to the sideline. He's celebrating. As soon as he gets to the sideline, he collapses in pain because he took such a shot across the back and the ribs.
Wow.
And that's after that first drive where, by Cignetti's count, there were 3 personal fouls. One of them, obvious, I think it was Jacoby Thomas, launched after a handoff into Mendoza's face mask and chin and bloodied him up.
I saw that play, and I couldn't believe they didn't call something on that. That was incredible. I mean, it was an option play in a way, but he had long given the ball up.
Yeah.
That's the stuff I did in 8th grade, and I got flagged. I'm like, I'm going to hit you anyway. And it's like, you can't do that, Dan. Well, you can't do that to Mendoza last night in the national championship game. That was ridiculous.
And like 2 plays before, there was roughing the passer where he'd clearly gotten rid of the ball. The rusher took another step and a half and did a full-on, you know, take your arms and shove him really hard across the chest and throw him backwards 5 feet onto his back.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this kid took a beating. I mean, you know, maybe his name should be Timex. Takes a licking and keeps on picking or something. I don't know.
And I think that was kind of part of the plan, was to rough him up, even if they took a couple 15-yard penalties to start the game, try to give themselves an opportunity.
It was obvious. Like, that hit by Thomas was like, you know, that's illegal, right? They simply didn't call it.
It was great. One of my favorite tweets from last night, someone said, if Fansville created a quarterback, it would be Fernando Mendoza, the Dr. Pepper commercial. But it was a really good one, and you know, an unbelievable season. I have to start wondering where they land in the list of all-time greats as far as college football teams, 16-0 in this era. And more. I guess crazy is the fact that Cignetti was able to turn it around in 2 years from maybe the worst team in football.
In 2 years, and I mean, this is a guy who waited a long time to be a head coach. A major college head coach.
Oh yeah,
he's in his 60s, and look, just all, you know, hats off and whatever else you want to say to them. Great season, great story. I do have to say, it is unconscionable for college kids to be playing a 16-game season. It's insane. It is It's dangerous. The number of injuries is going to be much greater. It completely destroys any idea that they're student athletes. Forget the student part of it anymore, which is a shame in my book.
Well, Beck said he hadn't been in class in 2 years.
this is...
He did. Two years, yeah.
Who said that?
Beck.
Carson Beck, Miami quarterback.
I graduated. I haven't been in class in 2 years, so you could throw Georgia under the bus as well there.
Jeez. It's so corrupt and it's so awful, and the kids, it doesn't matter what you're doing to them. They're just going to be exploited. And, yes, now they get NIL and all that kind of stuff, but somebody – that's 21 years old should not be playing a 16-game season. When I was growing up, everybody else played 11 games plus maybe a bowl game.
Yeah.
Notre Dame played 10 games plus maybe a bowl game, and that was it, and that was plenty.
Do you have any solution, television-wise or otherwise, for this staggered schedule? It's just maddening. The NFL just works like clockwork. You know when the games, and that kind of interferes. Colleges scheduling their playoff games around the NFL. For instance, the final night, like Saturday night, that should have been NFL in the afternoon, the championship game on Saturday night. If they could at least make that concession, this is just, it loses all its momentum.
It really does, and I think both the NFL and college football have gone nuts, and it's not really good for anybody. And I don't know, I guess I'm an old fogey, but I think you might get some really good competition, but it actually is not very sporting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I guess I don't want to just argue, but. More football, sign me up. I don't really care. I'll watch it.
I think the NFL's got it together, and they just have pushed college football into a corner where they've got to navigate around them.
Yeah.
That's what I've noticed.
Crazy NFL offseason, too, but we could probably talk about that another time. I do want to get into we'll get into some international stuff, too, but Quinn, we pushed you off last week. You had some mobile restaurants you wanted to give a hat tip to.
Well, yeah, everybody knows New Orleans has, great restaurant in every corner, et cetera, et cetera. Somehow I was just talking to my wife, and it has struck me that Mobile, it might not have all the fine dining and all that, but it has a lot of places where it's good food. The service is almost always really good. Everybody's friendly. And I don't think we necessarily support our restaurants enough, but there's a new one I just want to mention, a fairly new. It's actually been there about 7 months, but the Thai restaurant on Museum Drive right behind the fire station right near the hardware store. Down in that little...
Oh, yeah, right by Spring Hill Ace.
Little shopping center, yeah.
Exactly, and it's... You go in there, and, from the outside, it's just like, this is... sort of Dumpsville, sort of a forgotten little corner. And you go in, and they've made it so charming, and they're so friendly, and it's just wonderful. But, we have, I could go on, and I don't want to leave anybody else, but we have what I consider three really excellent fine dining locations, probably a lot more, but Noja, Royal Scam, Poor Baby. If you haven't eaten at those three, try them. They are really, really good. And then downtown is blessed with so many good lunch places. People that you go in there and the waiters all know you. Yep. The waiter's name. It's like Cheers. And they're friendly. Everybody knows Callahan's, I guess, but Debris is just great sandwiches.
Yeah, it's great.
Moe's. Heroes, the Mediterranean Cafe, Wenzel's, you could go on. I guess the point is, I hear a lot of Mobile complaining that, we don't really have a lot of good restaurants. We might not have the high-end restaurants, and we might not have all the color and the personality of every other block restaurant like New Orleans, but we got a lot of good places, and I just wanted to take a chance to urge people to support your local restaurants and to try new ones like like the Thai restaurant down there on Museum Drive.
Yes, that one's called Thai Chili by Siam. And I go into Spring Hill Ace all the time, so I walk by it. I haven't been in. I always think, though, because they have a hot yoga place right next to it, that that's a pretty deadly combination. Eating some hot Thai food and then going into hot yoga.
And I don't know what, I mean, chili clearly doesn't mean the same thing to them that it does to the rest of us. I don't know why it's the name Thai Chili, so I just say the Thai restaurant because chili has nothing to do with, like, you know, having beans and meat and that kind of stuff. I don't know what it is, but it's your basic Thai food, really well done, exquisitely presented with, you know, with just a couple of waiters and waitresses who, I mean, I don't know that they've ever stopped smiling. I mean,
that's nice. I like that.
Just the nicest, warmest people. So anyway, Go support your local folks.
And I tell you, quick shout out to one guy in particular is Noel Broughton, who he's got a number of restaurants around both sides of the bay, I believe. But his stuff is, he does a great job in staffing, and that makes all the difference. You know, like you were saying, the people know your name. You walk in, you're going to have a sandwich. They're happy to have you there. But he's got Debris, he's got Grace downtown, which is a fabulous restaurant with the rooftop. Mm-hmm. So Noel does a great job, and a lot of those. They've got to work their tails off to staff those places.
He and Liz.
And they've got to work their tail off to staff and make sure they get the right people in the back preparing the food. And it's always exquisite.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I don't know how it is that so many of these restaurants have wait staff. They stay there a long time.
Right.
They, you know, it's not a huge, terrible turnover. And They work hard, and they're friendly, and they're warm. I mean, all the places that I just mentioned are like that, and it's really impressive.
Yeah.
You know, and to kind of tie this into something Dan and I were discussing yesterday, we were kind of looking back at the early COVID times and how many places had to shut down. You know, so many of these small local restaurants either didn't come back or we didn't know if they'd come back. So judging by what you two guys are saying, because you get out more than I do to go eat, but it seems like we're kind of having a resurgence of a lot of these local restaurants.
We are. Oh, and of course, I should have mentioned, you know, I don't think of it primarily as a restaurant, but my goodness, I had a meal at Red or White the other night on Dolphin that was absolutely out of this world.
Yep.
I mean, you could go in there really a lot of good places.
I agree. It's, you know, downtown to Red or White, just off the downtown district on Dolphin and
they have beer there?
They do.
Okay, good.
Old Shell Road has become a breakfast haven now. All kinds of breakfast restaurants have suddenly popped up on Old Shell.
There have been, yeah. Good stuff. You guys have added about 8 new restaurants to my list that I got to make it out to.
Take you there, man. I want to treat you.
I think if Dan has another sandwich at Debris, they're going to have to name one after him. That's how often he's
Wait
a minute. I want a sandwich named after me there.
Hey, I know we want to get into some international stuff here.
Yeah, of course.
There's plenty of it.
I want to talk a little Greenland with you, Quinn, when we get back from the break here. That escalated even further overnight as Trump was hopping on Truth Social, I guess, on his way to Davos. I know he'll be in Davos for the World Economic Forum. I'm not sure if he left from the from Hard Rock Stadium last night and went right there. But we'll get into that and a little bit of the response from the European countries on the way next right here on Mobile Mornings.
Turn up your voice on the text line, 251-343-0106. Now, back to Mobile Mornings.
Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5.
Hey, continuing our conversation with Quinn Hillier. Read his work at quinnhillier.com. Writes for NOLA, The Advocate, over in Louisiana. And let's talk Greenland here. A big international week in Davos, World Economic Forum, and they'll have plenty to discuss there. Especially, I think Greenland may be kind of leading the way here with the president's push to acquire it by one way or another. He hopped on Truth Social last night, calling the territory imperative for national and world security, saying there can be, quote, no going back. He said he has discussed Greenland since with NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte and has agreed to some meetings with international leaders this week in Davos, where he's also scheduled to speak. What do you make of this, Quinn?
I think he's acting like a syphilitic Henry VIII. How's that?
That's pretty direct.
It's a word I need to look up.
Syphilitic. I think there's context there.
This is insane. The NATO alliance is the greatest peacekeeping alliance in the history of mankind, and he's willing to throw it all away for something, for basically the ability to have defense installations that they're already offering us. And look, you want to buy Greenland, and if Greenland's people want to join us, that's absolutely fine. Greenland would be a great acquisition for the United States for all the reasons Trump says. But there are a couple of things. Number one, we are a nation founded on the consent of the governed. I haven't seen the Greenlanders say that they want to be part of the United States. If they don't want to be part of the United States, then we don't have the consent of the governed. And that throws away. Here in the 250th anniversary year of our founding, we're going to throw out what is actually the most important phrase of the Declaration of Independence, which is the consent of the governed, number one. Number two, to do a military conquest, which is what he is threatening, of an ally, a totally peaceful ally, that's already doing everything we ask anyway, is so disgustingly immoral that it blows my mind. And the last thing I'm going to say is, if Congress doesn't actually decide right now to act like an independent branch of government to restore the proper balance of powers, then those people are the most spineless, gutless wonders that have ever existed. Congress can stop it now. They can, A, pass a resolution saying that that any military conquest would be off limits, and B, even more strongly, if they pass an appropriations bill that says no U.S. Treasury dollars shall go to any military attack on Greenland, then Trump cannot act.
Well,
the power of the purse is absolute. Now, Trump
a couple things here. I think
it.
NATO.
Trump could veto it, and then they should override the veto. And if they have any sense of self-worth and of decency and of anything, they will act.
Well, a couple things here. I don't think that the other members of the NATO alliance are going to just say, all right, adios, America. Thanks for protecting us all these years. We've been trying to get Greenland as a country for two centuries now, maybe. You know, you say that the Greenlanders, they have to consent. Were Alaskans consenting when we purchased them back in the 1800s? I mean, it seems like this is something maybe Trump's definitely being a little more boisterous about it and trying to push his leverage, but this is something that America's been trying to do forever, is get Greenland.
That doesn't make it right. We should offer to buy it. It's worth buying. It is worth buying. The very mention of military conquest is what is it's so against everything we stand for and we believe in, which is why, by the way, polls are showing that about 80% of the American public is against it.
Well, look,
it's insane, and if I were Europe, I would double and redouble my troops there, and I would go to war over.
That would take them up to about 150 troops if they doubled it.
I've been outspoken that I thought the tact was wrong. I don't agree with the threatening of all that. I think he's just willing. He's eventually going to get to a deal. Quinn, thanks for your time.
Thanks a lot.
Mobile Bay starts its day with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig on Mobile Mornings.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. Mobile Mornings at 8:34. And we're going to get to the text line, 251-343-0106. A lot to get to this hour. More on Greenland, maybe a little Venezuela, maybe a little Davos.
Minnesota.
A little Minnesota. And a little Alabama High School Athletic Association as well. There was a story in Lanyap basically laying out where they are right now. Not telling a story of anything new, but kind of laying it out, but where the table is set right now, what might happen later in the week.
Did you see what Trump Truth Social about the HSAA? I'm sure.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I'm sure if he had commentary, he would have posted about it.
Yeah.
But let's talk. Well, continue kind of that conversation about Greenland. We got a lot of texts once we got into that with Quinn there. Toothless Bammer said, give Dick Cheney credit when he was VP, referred to those NATO members as irrelevant. He said, he was laughing. He said, Quinn, thinking Brussels, Belgium, and Euro NATO is still relevant. And that's kind of, so Trump pushes the negotiations, like he always does, and the same thing that always happens, right? People are frustrated with his tactics, but his tactics seem to work out fairly often. And by even mentioning, you know, military conquest, and then you have some of these members, you know, sending their troops over, and then Germany evacuating immediately from Greenland, I think that also kind of proves the point that if we wanted to take it, we could take it.
Yeah.
I don't think it means we're going to take it militarily. He's offered to buy Greenland. And as I was kind of laying out there, you know, this is nothing new. America has wanted Greenland as part of our asset portfolio for a very long time. There was a good little timeline I stumbled on yesterday. So 1867, Andrew Johnson explored buying Greenland and Iceland right after the Alaska Purchase. World War II, we've talked about this, FDR, U.S. took over Greenland's defense while Denmark was occupied. 1946, Truman offered $100 million in gold to buy Greenland. Throughout the Cold War, from Eisenhower to Kennedy, there were nonstop negotiations for bases, radars, missiles. Post-Cold War continued with Clinton, Bush, and Obama, each expanding Arctic security and missile defense. In Trump's first term, he said it out loud. He said, we want Greenland. That's what presidents have been discussing privately for a century and a half. And now it's just escalated to that point where he wants it, and he wants it now. And there are plenty of reasons we've discussed, whether it's, you know, Russia being right across from the Arctic Circle.
There's plenty of great reasons.
Minerals, the shipping lanes that Michael and others have been texting about. So it really just comes down to people not liking the way that Trump is going about it. And as far as the NATO threat, like this is going to be an end to NATO, are you telling me that Europe is ready to call off their partnership militarily with the United States? Are they good to do that right now with Russia knocking on the door?
So Trump's the deal maker, right? He's looking at the cards. He's saying, I got all the cards. I think the thing that people that I've got a problem with is just invoking the idea that we're going to use force if we need to. Well, we're never going to need to. I will. Let's see here real quick. Pete's on the line, and he'll tell us what's.
Hey, Pete, what's going on?
Hey, good morning, y'all.
Morning, buddy.
I just had to chime in here because I think we're missing part of this perspective.
Okay.
Quinn said something about NATO is the greatest defensive alliance ever. And he's not wrong, but it's not because of the pansy Europeans. It's because of us. We're the ones who carried the water, carried the load. We paid for it for almost a century while they sat around on their welfare states spending money on themselves and lecturing us about, oh, you guys work too much and you guys don't have the standard of living we do. That's right, because we paid for your defense. And we need to stop acting like the Europeans are a bunch of venerable, nice people who are noble. They're not. They're parasites. They're immoral. They've sold out to globalists. They're godless. And that's why it's in the national security strategy this year that Europe may no longer be a reliable ally. He's absolutely right about that. And one of the reasons he's going for it is because these pansies will sell out to their mothers. I mean, sell their mothers at a moment's notice. So he's got to shore this up. Yeah. So really what it should be is the Europeans ought to be, well, thank you, the United States. You've been defending us for almost a century. I mean, you got us out of World War. You saved us World War One. You liberated us World War Two. You protected us from the Soviet hordes. And now we're talking to you about what needs to happen to security. And you're getting you're getting your dander up. This is ridiculous.
And Pete, you know, I need to go down the list of the times that the national media and other countries have said that Trump was going to end NATO. Remember when he was talking tough and saying, listen, you guys need to spend more money. We're footing the bill on all this. Just pick it up a little bit. They end up picking it up a little bit. Remember when he was telling those European countries to stop getting energy from Russia because it leaves them reliant on an adversary? And he was exactly right on that. So just because of his rhetoric and because of the Trump derangement syndrome, time and time again, they act like this is the end of the world when what the result has actually been is a stronger NATO.
Exactly. And look, it's kind of ridiculous. They're like, nobody's going to war. They're not going
right.
to fight us.
Of course not.
First of all, they're pansies. Look, I served 3 years in a NATO position in Italy back in the 90s. And I used to go to NATO schools and conferences in Germany. And you know what all the NATO allies would tell us? They would say, look, we may squabble a little bit, but the truth is without U.S. leadership, NATO is nothing because the Europeans hate each other and can't get along.
Yeah.
I mean, I heard this from all the different NATO allies. They don't want to listen to the French. They don't want to listen to the Germans. They will only rally around when we come and show leadership. So really what should be happening, instead of them, you know, being ungrateful, they ought to be saying, all right, let's all get together and figure out how we work together on this. Because he's right. He's trying to defend them from the Russians and the Chinese and all that, because they will sell out. They're pansies.
You got history.
Stop thinking that they're honorable people.
Yeah.
They're not.
You got skin in the game. You got history. So you have a lot of passion on this, right, Pete? And we know each other pretty well.
Yeah.
May I give you some advice? Don't worry about it. He's going to get the deal. He's going to get it.
Oh, I know. I'm not worried about it. I just get tired of everybody going, oh, Trump is so blah, 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 and it's unconscionable that we're being mean to the Europeans. What do you mean we're not being mean to the Europeans? We've been protecting them all this time. They need to put a hat in hand and say thank you, America.
Yeah, and wasn't Eisenhower the first the Secretary General or whatever, the over NATO? In 1951, Pete Ream, you know what Eisenhower had to say about NATO in 1951? He stated,
I don't remember.
In 10 years, all American troops stationed in Europe for national defense purposes have not been returned to the United States. This whole project will have failed. So he was basically saying in 1951.
If Europe hasn't picked up the slack.
They haven't picked up the slack in 10 years. It's been, 75 years?
Mm.
So
it's 80 years and they haven't picked up the
right.
Only recently did Trump get them to start carrying
right.
their share.
Yeah, not right. And he bombs Iran and he ends up in Europe that weekend and they're kissing the ring. They're French kissing the ring, some of them. So it's kind of like, they know it. It's the only problem I had with any of this was just the rhetoric about, you know, why do you have to go there? You got all the cards, you got the deal, you're going to get the deal. There just wasn't any need for that. But I get your perspective, but that's what I'm saying, Pete. Like, come on, man, you're going to get
I think some of the people took it too far. I think this is more of, they always go, well, are you going to attack? And you know him, he goes, I'm not taking anything off the table. Mm-hmm. He never takes any cards off the table. So I think a lot of this is people jumping to conclusions.
Yeah, his reply,
because
okay.
We're not attacking them, and they're not attacking us.
No.
I mean, that's why they sent 13 people with their backpacks and granola bars to Greenland. Right.
Thanks, Pete. Good call. We appreciate it.
Thanks.
251-343-0106. If you want to jump on, we'll go back to the phones really quickly and talk with Derek. Morning, Derek.
What's going on? See what Quinn does? Y'all should run like a Pepto-Bismol commercial after his show or after his thing, because, I mean, it really, my stomach hurts now. All right, two things. Number one, Quinn's always full of crap. That doesn't count. All right, number one. We're moving into an era where treaties and allies does not matter anymore. Okay, so it all comes down to possession. You know, to think that we have a treaty with certain companies or countries for them to do what they say they're going to do, if that world is long gone.
Right.
Go ahead.
No, I think you're right. I've read that as well. There is something that Trump's saying we need to own it because that's a differential that means something.
That's where we are.
Yeah, it's going to mean something.
Yeah,
or it could.
The world is moving now.
Yes, yes.
You know, it used to be nice when we all had talks and pieces of paper. Well, those are all of it. Number two, NATO was created to control NATO countries to keep them from fighting. Europe is just as volatile as the Middle East. Anybody right now can go on Google and do a time lapse of the wars in Europe. Start whenever you want to start. They have been fighting themselves for, if you want to say thousands of years in the Middle East, great. Europe has been doing the same thing with the USA as a referee. NATO was to create it to if one attacks us, they all attack us all. Okay, they have been fighting Russia for how long? At least 200 years. I mean, before World War I and before World War II, there was many wars. So to say that it's this great peacekeeping force, it's not. You know, it's meant there to govern the cousins from fighting each other. So to say that NATO is anything more than, you know, with the U.S. being the parent in the room, that's it. I mean, it's farcical to say that they're a world good. No. They were created because you can't control yourselves.
And I will, you know, I'll disagree on the first part of that take that allies aren't important anymore. I think it's important to have allies. I think it's important to have allies that have your best interest in mind as well as theirs, rather than just piggybacking off of the defense that we've been giving them. I mean, Japan is an important ally. There are plenty of really important allies that we'll need if we go to war with China or if we end up going to war with Russia.
I'm glad you brought that up. Do you think, so we've been studying a lot about Japan, you know, Japan's economy, all this stuff in Japan. You know, do you really think when it comes down to push and shove, they might be in it for a second, you know, but at the first sign that, you know, there's any, that they're going to suffer any more than they're suffering now, Japan will pull out. I mean, Japan is not that.
That hasn't really been the history of the.
But Japan is not going to sacrifice their nation for the U.S.
No, the history of Japan is sacrifice. That's pretty much what they've done forever and ever. And they did a pretty good job of laying the wood to China over the years.
Yeah, I mean, if they have to choose, you know, I mean, it's if they have to choose between trade partners, they're choosing Asia over the U.S. when it comes down to actual boots on the ground.
I think
they don't have the military. They don't have any of that.
So where
they don't have the economy.
I agree with you. The point that you made that I think that I heard, maybe I misheard it, was basically talking about the ownership of Greenland. It is going to make a difference.
Yeah.
It does make a big, big difference. It could make, it could be a big difference in the end, because when you actually own it, you get to call the shots, period. That's it. So I get that. I get that. And that just having a handshake or an agreement that's that is somehow internationally contractual, that's not going to cut it in the end if you've got to make all the calls. Is that what you were saying? Because I do agree with that.
Yeah, it is. It is. It is. I mean, it's literally, I mean, you know, you got a farm, you're leasing 20 acres across from you, but you can't build a fence over there to really secure it.
Mm-hmm.
You're only leasing.
Right.
So any infrastructure you spend on it, which we're talking about, you know, Sean's a farmer. All right, man, we're going to put up 5 strands, you know, just 80 acres. That's a quarter mile all the way around. That's a lot of money just to lease it. I don't have it, you know.
Yep.
So, I mean, it comes down to now you really are, you're putting up your fences. This is ours. And, you know, you can't cross that line now.
Yeah.
I wish the world was different, but it's not.
Appreciate you called, Derek. Yeah, we've been running that lease versus ownership analogy for a little while here as far as Greenland is concerned. I thought, too, you know, Trump, he put a little more specifics here in some of these more recent social media posts about why the acquisition of Greenland is so important. And he's saying, listen, we've spent, I forget the dollar amount he put on it, but with this big Golden Dome project and building up our missile defense system, similar to Israel's Iron Dome, that Greenland is a very important part of that.
Mm-hmm.
And he really laid that out well in one of these more recent Truth Social posts. And when he gets into the specifics, I think it certainly helps his case. But, you know, who am I to tell Trump how to gain leverage over someone in a negotiation?
No, he's got the leverage. He's got the leverage. It's now a matter of where do we go from here? This is going to be very interesting. Davos is going to be, there's going to be headlines flying out of there. But I think what you're going to see, I would guess, at this point, the heat gets turned down a little bit. Then you start to see, they're figuring out how to come to an agreement on all this. That's what I see. Maybe a Davos, maybe after, I don't know if it's going to be something that's solved before February gets here, mm-hmm. or sometime over the summer. I don't know, but he's got the cards.
I wish, and maybe there is a good poll out there, a polling of Danish residents and whether they would like to see their country sell Greenland to America for, what, hundreds of billions of dollars? I've seen some posts from them saying, listen, this would be transformational for our country.
Yeah.
I mean, already there have been some issues between Denmark and Greenland with Denmark's ownership, because right. the Greenland people don't like, you know, the fact that
they're
Denmark
being lorded over. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I bet if there was a poll inside of Denmark over whether they want to see a sale go through, it would look a lot different than whatever this poll is in America that shows most people don't want it or whatever
you,
they're saying.
You can have people the protesting in Copenhagen, is that in Denmark? I don't even know. All those countries are kind of are like riddles to me. I know where they all are, and up there in Scandinavia, basically. But Denmark, you can have people on the streets there protesting this move. You can have Greenland with what 50,000 people in
57,000
live there. So you have a couple of thousand protesting there. It's not going to mean anything. It's the deal. I'm a guy on a bar stool drinking non-alcohol beer.
Mm.
I read up on it. I try to keep an eye on it. Some things I'll share my opinion. This is one that I'm going to share my opinion and feel good about it. We will end up with Greenland.
All right. Who's going to be their head coach and general manager?
That'll be Cignetti. Cignetti will soon be over Greenland. Dan and Dalton, good morning.
News, weather, traffic, and sports. You're listening to Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, 8:55. Mobile Mornings, Jeff Ford show is on the way, and I think you've got the Jeff Ford lineup.
I do. He'll talk with U.S. Representative Gary Palmer in Hour 1. I'm sure he'll have a take on the international goings-on.
Yeah, it's his stuff.
Candidate for Attorney General Catherine Robertson joins Jeff in Hour number 2. And then the AL GOP Chairman John Wall joins Jeff in Hour number 3. Don Lemon, man, geez. He, for someone who I already did not like, he's not earning any points with me this week with the... The church protest, which he says he was just there as a journalist, but he was pretty well embedded with those folks that walked into that church in Minneapolis and held up a church service. So the Attorney General, Keith Ellison of Minnesota, he was on with Lemon last night on Lemon's YouTube interview show.
Yeah, because Lemon's no longer employed by anybody that would write a check for him.
Which is more or less what Brett Baer, as he was talking about this last night with the roundtable, he referred to Lemon as a... what do you say, a podcast host, which is accurate, but he kind of took a little...
A swipe at him.
A fun swipe at him, and you could tell he kind of grates on his nerves, too. So Ellison, the Attorney General, goes on with Lemon and basically says, yeah, there's no charges are going to be brought, at least from the state, against those protesters who went into that church and completely brought it to a halt. And
how did he justify it?
Well, he said the FACE Act... only refers to, and I'm trying to bring this down out of my memory from watching a little bit this last night. He said it really doesn't have as much to do with interfering in a religious service, but has more to do with, and it escapes me. I don't want to quote him wrong. He was basically, you know, using what the FACE Act describes, which is, you know, if you bring a halt to a religious service or something like that, I think it's pretty clear cut if you read it that charges can be brought. And he was just kind of politically weaseling his way out of that. So he goes on Lemon's YouTube show to announce that. Meanwhile, the Trump administration, they said they are launching an investigation. The Justice Department is into the protesters who disrupted the worship service. Demonstrators entered that city's church in St. Paul with the anti-ICE slogans. I mean, can you imagine sitting in those pews? A pretty scary situation.
Sure. Yes,
you have
sure.
all these anti-ICE protesters walk in.
Can you imagine?
And Don Lemon also says that the response has basically been, the response with people upset with him being a part of that is because of white supremacy. That was his answer yesterday.
I mean, you were so bad, CNN let you go. I mean, what more do we have to say? CNN said, Don Lemon, your time here is over. CNN.
So the FACE Act makes it a federal crime to use or threaten to use force to injure, intimidate, or interfere with a person seeking reproductive health services or with a person lawfully trying to exercise the First Amendment right of religious freedom at a place of religious worship. And it was used against the KKK. Ellison, his response last night, and the FACE Act, by the way, is designed to protect the rights of people seeking reproductive rights so that people for a religious reason cannot use religion to break into women's reproductive health centers. So Ellison is describing the FACE Act as being all about not interfering with Planned Parenthood or whatever it may be.
He forgot the second paragraph of all that?
Yeah, you know, he said it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
He says you can't use religion to interfere with reproductive rights. I mean, what a joke of an attorney general they have in Minnesota.
We've known that for a while. 859 FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings. Back with you in the morning beginning at 6 a.m.